say, Texas talking. I'm gonna hoop upside your head, Texas talking.
Hi, this is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with a special edition of the Tribcast focusing on a new Complete College Texas report. Joining me is Stan Jones, the president of Complete College America and the former commissioner of higher education from Indiana.
Hello. Glad to be here in Texas.
And we have James Huffines, the president and COO of Plains Capital Corporation and the former chairman of the University of Texas System.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And also, last but not least, Charles Matthews, the Chancellor Emeritus of Texas State University System.
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you for having us today.
And so what, Stan, we could start with you, because this is your group's report. What is this report, and what brings you to Texas, like you said?
So we're here to release the report. It was a contract through the foundation, and Charles can talk more about the background, about what brought them to that point that they wanted to have a report about Texas. But it's focused broadly on college completion. Ever since 1999, when Closing the Gaps was released, that was a huge impactful in Texas, but it also kind of foreshadowed what was going to happen across the country in respect to demographics that's happening today.
And Closing the Gaps is the state's plan to sort of bring themselves up to parity with other big states.
By the year 2015. Right. We're about done with it, yeah.
And I think the state has done a remarkable job, especially in the access agenda. And there's a lot of good things happening on the completion success part of the agenda. So our report kind of highlights what we call some of the trailblazers in Texas, some of the colleges and universities that are doing outstanding work. But it also paints the picture that there's a lot more work to do in Texas, that the challenge is huge. We only have about one out of three Texans graduating on time at four-year colleges and universities, and one out of six at community colleges. And then we point to what we consider to be five game changers, significant things that Texas could do to change that equation.
Chairman Huffines, what is your interest in the report? Someone with long-standing knowledge of higher education in Texas.
I'm here today as a representative of the Texas Business Leadership Council. I serve as vice chairman of the Business Leadership Council in Texas. And this is a very important issue to the business community throughout Texas. We have to get more college graduates well-prepared out there for the job for the jobs of the future. And if we're going to have a prosperous state, we've got to have a very successful higher education program. And there's no doubt secondary education, higher ed, is the economic catalyst for this state. So we have to do a better job, as Stan said, of graduating and training these individuals, these Texans, for the next generation.
Well, and Mr. Matthews, you've been also in higher education in Texas for a long time. Are these new issues,
Let me first tell you the role that I've got is there's a foundation that's part of the coordinating board that's under the auspices of the coordinating board called College for All Texans. It was started some years ago. And our role is to try to help in any way we can to try to deal with, just to figure out what it is Texas needs to do a better job. I think the first thing I'd like to say is that I really give a lot of credit to Governor Perry, because Perry has challenged everybody in higher education. He was the first to do that. The legislature has also done a pretty good job of challenging higher education, as has the taxpayers and the students. And higher education understands that we've got to do a better job of graduating kids. We do really good on getting them to go to school. I mean, our access rate is, and that's what Closing the Gap was about, was trying to get more people to go to college. We did that really well, and the legislature does the funding based on access. But now we need to change the focus, and we need to change the focus on success. We need to make sure these folks either get, depending on their abilities and their interest, either get a certificate. Maybe that's in welding, or maybe it's in climbing telephone poles to repair electrical lines, or it's getting a PhD. We need to do a better job of putting those people through the system. Texas spends more money on higher education, I believe, than any state in the union. I mean, the problem's not enough money. The problem is, how do we do a better job of focusing on getting the kind of results that Texas has got to have? As James has just said, we've got to have those graduates if Texas is going to continue to be the economic engine that it is for the country right now.
Well, and you mentioned the funding. Right now, it's state gives appropriations based on how many students you have in your the seats.
12-day.
Right. And one of the big proposals or the strategies, game-changing strategies, I think is what you call them in here, is performance-based funding, which, of course, has been discussed in the legislature for the
last few sessions.
Yeah, at least three.
But we've yet to actually see that change. You know, why is that an important change to make?
Well, I mean, we would say this is happening pretty fast across the country. About 5 years ago, there were only three states in the country that had any form of performance funding, and now there are 10, and there's another six in process. So this is rapidly sweeping the country because it's recognition that to have a success or completion agenda, you need to change the incentives. I mean, some would say we have performance funding now, we're just incenting the wrong performance. We're incenting, you know, you're rolling by the 12th day, and we're incenting for you to do what you did last year. And so these are just changing the incentives in the system. And I think there's broad support, as evidenced here, within the business community, within the higher education community. All the presidents have signed on. They've developed their own metrics, also within philanthropy and government. And so it's really a rare occasion in Texas when all those groups come together behind a single issue. But it's also a question of, you know, this opportunity may not always exist, and so they really need to grab it during this session of the Texas General Assembly.
Well, and each of those 10 states goes about it somewhat differently, right? You know, I've one knock I've heard is that, you know, in some cases it's just sort of, they say they have performance-based funding, but it doesn't actually change the amount of money schools are getting, so it doesn't really incentivize anything. You know, is it just a veneer of performance-based funding?
Well, that's fair criticism. But on the other hand, there are states that are, there are consequences. I mean, I can tell you, I mean, Indiana's been in it as long as anybody, and I was the commissioner of higher education when it started, and there are consequences, and there are presidents that are unhappy that there are consequences. And so every session, you know, it's an engaged effort. And it's made a dramatic difference in policies in Indiana. You know, every college has a completion plan. There's rewards for graduating on time. They've cut summer school tuition to encourage more students to go in the summer. I mean, there's a lot of things happening because of it. And we say, just to be clear, is performance funding by itself isn't going to graduate a student, but it creates the conditions for change and the incentives that causes colleges and universities to get up every morning and think about, well, I need to, you know, meet those incentives. How am I going to do that?
Reeve, you might remember in the 07 and 09 sessions, there were discussions and actually a little money allocated to higher ed along the performance funding. It went away in 2011. What's different this time is the fact that all the universities, all the presidents have embraced the seven metrics outlined in this report. In previous years, because of the formula funding, some of the universities fought the performance funding. But now I think everyone is together and realize that we do have to change, we do have to create incentives and create the environment for these children to graduate sooner and on time.
I think the other driver is the finance. The cost of higher education has gotten high. Fees and tuition is way too expensive. We probably hit that tipping point that, you know, it can't go up much more. And we're getting a really bad reaction from everybody. Kids are going to college, not completing anything. You know, they don't have anything to show for it. They were there a year or two. All they have to show for it is maybe a student loan debt of $10,000-$12,000 in some cases, and no degree, no certificate, nothing to help them be gainfully employed in a meaningful way. And so, you know, you can't be in the business of dealing with students every day and not understand that that's a huge problem, and you've got to do everything you can to make sure that we're making those kids a success. And Stan has done a really good job with his report of outlining a pretty simple steps that can be put in place. And in almost every case that he pointed out, some Texas college or junior college or junior college system or university system is already doing some of this stuff. We just need to get it more broadly based. He's identified some goals that I think you'll see higher education coalesce around, but there's some work to be done. I mean, we need to talk to people. The coordinating board will begin those discussions when the legislative session is over, and I think you'll see a buy-in because this is really a common sense approach to increasing success.
I'd like to echo what Charles said. some of the universities, this isn't a new issue. Some of the universities have been working on this for years. But again, what is new this time is, I think, across all of higher ed in Texas, community colleges and four-year universities, they're all come together with a plan that we're and a commitment to improve the graduation rates. And it's just essential, and therefore we're all calling on the legislature to try to get the performance funding passed in this session.
Well, and what's the status of it right now? Right, it's not in the budget in the House or the Senate, but it is in Article 11, which is sort of the wish list that they can add stuff to from in conference, right?
Well, you have to ask the member of the legislature, but I know that that issue has been worked really hard, and we're all very, very helpful.
And in the 07-09 sessions, it came in at the very last 2 weeks.
Right, it did.
We're getting close to those last 2 weeks. Can't come soon enough. So what are the other, if you were going to choose setting performance-based funding aside, you know, what are the other recommendations there that really stand out?
Well, I think the one that probably just by definition, most students, unfortunately, especially community colleges, start in remedial courses, and for many of them, that's the first and last college experience. In Texas, across the country, 60% of students start in remedial courses. Many of the open access institutions, the four-year institutions, there'll be 20 to 30% may start in some of those remedial courses. And again, across the country, but in Texas, you're just bigger than everybody else, and so there are bigger issues. But the statistics are pretty similar across the country. Many of these students never graduate, and that's the unfortunate part. As these gentlemen have pointed out, you know, the success of the Access Agenda has been great, but if we need to get these students through the first level math and English courses and then on to graduation.
Let me tell you how bad the problem is in Dallas County Junior College District that I happen to be familiar with. About 70% of the kids they get into that system are kids that have to do remediation courses. Mm-hmm. So you can take remediation in English or writing or mathematics and maybe have to take those courses 2 or 3 times. You spend all that money, all of that time, all of that effort, and maybe you don't pass. You've got nothing to show for the time you were in school. There's no credit. You just paid your money and you've got nothing for it. That's got to change. One of the things that he pointed out is the math program that's at Texas State that has figured out a way to by offering more support than traditionally is done, is to not have a student go to remediation, have him go to the regular math class and just build this level of support in there. And the Gates people, the Lemna Foundation, has funded $1 million, and that's spread out through, I think it's 6 4-year schools and 7 2-year schools to put in place that program, started last year, and we're seeing tremendous success. And so there, a student who is not good in math, who is able to get through Algebra 2 because of this increased support, will feel a level of success that he probably has never felt in his academic career. That feeling of success, I think, will drive him towards the goal of trying to get done. He says, okay, math isn't going to keep me out of this. There's not any reason now that I can't get a degree. Math was the hardest thing for me. I can do the rest of this stuff. And these folks have shown me how to do mathematics and how to get a passing grade in it. That's going to drive that person to success. Just that one issue, I think, alone will have an enormous impact.
Charles, could I make a friendly amendment to your statement there? You so aptly articulated that they take these remedial courses and don't end up with anything, and that is true, but they do, unfortunately, the students and their families usually more times than not end up with debt that takes them years and years to pay back without the college education to prepare them for the job to pay it back. And that is a tragedy, and it's a tragedy for the students, the families, and we just have to create a sense of urgency, Reeve, to get this corrected.
How much of the onus is on the K-12 system to get students to a point where they don't need remediation?
I think what the colleges have decided is that that's not our job. Our job is to provide teachers and to help in any way we can with our educated students. But we are to, in public education, we're to educate in one of our institutions, because a lot of them are open, some of them are open enrollment. Our job is to educate whatever comes to our door. And so it's our job to take that student wherever they are and to make sure that success, and we put them through to graduation, whatever level. I don't think it really matters to us. I mean, it matters, of course, but I think that's a debate that higher education needs to stay out of, that somebody else needs to be worrying about that. We've got all we can do on our level.
You know, actually, I think that's a really forward looking thinking that Charles has talked about, because for years higher education said, well, if we only had better prepared students, you know, we'd have more graduates, and they have put the responsibility on K-12, and there's no question that we do need better students coming out of K-12, but at the same time, as Charles has pointed out, you know, we have a responsibility within higher education to take who walks in the door, who qualifies, and really move them along the way to help them meet their promise, help them meet their dreams. And so I think now there's just been this awakening in the country that we can do much, much better with these students, and there are too many students that find themselves in the set of circumstances.
Well, and unlike performance-based funding, which is clearly, that's a legislative issue, right? How states appropriate their money. Is this recommendation, or are all the recommendations in here things that the legislature needs to be considering, or are these things for universities to and community colleges to hear and act on their own?
Well, different states have done it differently, and I would expect Texas would do it differently anyway.
Sort of our way.
Sure. Some states have passed legislation, and Connecticut has. There's legislation pending in Florida. Colorado has. Others have done it through state policy, through a state board of regents, through a coordinating board. Others have been changing their practices at the college or university level. So it can happen many different ways. You know, I think with the report, with the commitment of the foundation, with the coming together of the business groups and the coordinating board, I think there's a lot of people kind of pushing the same direction. So I think good things are going to happen in Texas.
You know, we're one of the other places that I serve, there's a committee appointed by the coordinating board that has the job of doing what the folks did 15 years ago who wrote Closing the Gap. And our job, we've been working a little over a year at it, our job is to decide what Texas ought to look like in higher education by the year 2030. Well, the first thing that you learn is that by 2030, when you interview, and we've done interviews with people literally all over the world, the best minds that we can find, you find that Texas, to continue to have the high standard of living that we'd like to have, has got to educate in some way, either a certificate or an advanced degree, about 70% of all of our population, of our working population, at 22 to 24 to 45 or 55, they've got to have some sort of degrees. In the past, my generation had a higher percentage of completion than the folks who are younger. If you look at the demographics of Texas, the kids that are in the 24 to 35, their success rate is less than the folks that are in the 55 degree area, age bracket. And so we're about to get hit really bad. So you take the two things that you have to have about 70% have some sort of post-secondary achievement, plus the fact that we're about to drop off the cliff when the folks who are now retiring out, who had the higher percentage of completions drop out, we're going to get hit with a double whammy. So Texas doesn't have time to mess around. We've got to jump all over this. And this report is a way to begin to articulate that message.
Well, how much of a sort of shift in thinking is this going to require? One of the little notes that interested me was the idea of what is full-time in Texas. And I think it's we sort of consider 12 credit hours
yes.
full-time. But to get a Texas grant, you only need nine hours. Right. When the report says, really you need 15 per semester to graduate on time. But it seems like we'd have to, I mean, that's just a little shift, but how big is the sort of mind shift we're calling for here?
I think it's a big shift for the legislature, and I think it would be very constructive if they would raise the grants to 12 hours to qualify. Unfortunately, I've seen it many, many times. People get the grants, which are limited, and they take 9 hours and drop out. And so they're taking away a grant from a student, possibly, that is trying to graduate on time. So I would like to see the legislature also raise the credit hours required for a Texas grant. I don't know what you've seen in other states, Stan.
I think that it's interesting. I mean, if you think about it pretty simply, if you start by taking 12 credit hours, you're already on the five-year plan.
Yep.
You know, so and there's and actually the evidence is pretty substantial that that students that take 15 hours do better than students that take 12. They have higher grade point averages. They're more likely to complete courses. Clearly, they're more likely to graduate. More likely to graduate on time. And so some of this kind of you know, we kind of suggest sometimes that, well, maybe students can't handle 15. Well, the evidence doesn't support that.
Well, and the Commissioner of Higher Education, Raymond Paredes, has been working now at least two sessions to try to change the way those Texas grants are done, that they now should be rewarded, awarded primarily on merit. In other words, kids that have proven in their high schools that they can do the work. That those are the folks that go to the front of the line. Because as James just said, there isn't enough money to fund everybody. And so and we're seeing too many students that are able to, because they're the first in line, to get a grant and then not be successful, not be serious about going to school, drop out, and there's tax dollars that have just gone away. And some kid who's sitting over there who is qualified, needs the money, didn't get to go to school because somebody wasted money before him. And that is absolutely
it's
got to
change.
It's got to change.
Well, and we have two, you know, former Texas higher education administrators here. You know, when you look at this report and you're having these discussions, you look back and think of anything you would have done differently?
No, I don't think so. Again, a lot of these problems and challenges had been identified, and various systems and campuses have been working on them. I think now it's more of a united effort and a collaborative effort with the community college system and with all the public universities. But these are challenges. If Texas is going to be an economic engine in the future, we've got to have a trained workforce, and we've got to graduate more students on time.
But here's a point, too. In higher education, when you're trying to get something done among universities or staff people or faculty or administrators or presidents, you have to have a collaborative approach. In other words, everybody's got to be on board. When I became chancellor in 2005, we began some of these conversations. As James has pointed out, there was not widespread agreement. That's changed. It's changed because we've had all these debates. We haven't done a top-down approach. We've allowed everybody to express their opinion and to think through these issues, beginning to understand more and more in these conversations the responsibility we have to students and to parents and to taxpayers. It takes a little while to change all of those thoughts. Okay, we're all on board. We understand that it costs too much to go to school and that we need to make sure these folks are successful. And then you have a plan like this that is well thought out, is reasonable. It's not anything that's going to be too hard for most people to do. It's just a refocusing of their efforts and their money. And I think you're going to see an acceptance.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think what we're seeing in most states is that, as James has said, I mean, the problem's been identified previously. There are some best practices in Texas that are really national models. And the really question is, can you scale? And if you scale in Texas, it means that's so much bigger. But that's really where this is. Can you take best practices and make it campus-wide, make it system-wide, make it statewide? And that's really the challenge, and the bringing together of the different groups is an important part of that.
One of the challenges we found at UT was the fact that we have a wide diversity of academic campuses. You know, we have some campuses that have 60-70% part-time students, and compared to UT Austin, which is almost 100% full-time students. So you really have to have some flexibility because each campus is different. Texas State is different than Lamar or Sol Ross. Yes. So I do think we have to, in this program, we have to have some degree of flexibility to let the local campuses and the systems be more innovative to find out what works best for their students and for their campus.
Well, and you know, you were talking about the buy-in in Texas. As you go around the country, because Complete College America is obviously not just about Texas, right?
It's about... We work 32 states.
What are the main obstacles? Is it just apathy, or is it philosophical disagreements?
Well, I think that the awareness of the issue is really developed quite dramatically in the last several years. I think it's the will to get something done, and the will is a lot. I mean, that means the legislative support. It means governor support. It means business community support, higher education support, and especially in a state like Texas that can be very you know, could turn into factions really quickly, it's even more important that that coalescing, you know, around common goals by the different groups. And so that's really what has to happen. And it's really, I think I've said this in other states, it's really a question of leadership in order to get it done.
Well, any final thoughts before we wrap up? We didn't get to every recommendation in the report, obviously, but it's on our website and people can check it out. We'll add a link to the post for this.
Thank you for having us today.
Absolutely. Reeve. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
So Stan Jones, Charles Matthews, James Huffines, and our producer Todd for helping us out. Thanks to all
thank
of you,
you.
And thanks for listening.
Texas Talking. Texas Talking.